B-Pod Studios.
The Bat. Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Maz.
Yeah, Maz, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Maz.
It's time for Felger and Maz, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Who's their starting quarterback week one next year?
Well, if you could tell me how much practice time they're going to have. Let's just say they no offseason, they just start training camp on time, say around August 1st. I guess I'd go with Stidham, but it's, you know, look, it's going to be a competition. And, you know, Jarrett has obviously come a long ways, a lot of things that we haven't seen with a year worth of practice. I know, you know, internally, they're talking about this being a competition. And, you know, all things being equal, he was a rookie then. He'll be a different player.
The Bat. Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Maz.
Yeah, Maz, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Maz.
It's time for Felger and Maz, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Who's their starting quarterback week one next year?
Well, if you could tell me how much practice time they're going to have. Let's just say they no offseason, they just start training camp on time, say around August 1st. I guess I'd go with Stidham, but it's, you know, look, it's going to be a competition. And, you know, Jarrett has obviously come a long ways, a lot of things that we haven't seen with a year worth of practice. I know, you know, internally, they're talking about this being a competition. And, you know, all things being equal, he was a rookie then. He'll be a different player. But Brian Hoyer, you know, beat him out last year. I mean, he outplayed Jarrett Stidham last year. It's just that economics came into the equation, and they had to go with the younger guy to back up Brady. And you know, Hoyer just became expendable. So, you know, I wouldn't sleep on Brian Hoyer. I mean, I think that Stidham ends it at the end of the day as the starter because he has – you know, potentially he's been in the system for a whole nother year. But, you know, I think we're going to have a real competition if they don't bring in somebody else from the outside.
Okay, so that was a follow-up question. Is there still a chance they bring in someone from the outside, do you think?
I'm not ruling it out. I mean, I think that they're at the point now. You have Andy Dalton in Cincinnati. You have Cam Newton. And the Patriots are in a position, at least right now, until they do something or nothing with Joe Tooney. They need to drive a hard bargain, and nobody drives a bargain like Bill Belichick. And so, and the big X factor in all this is, and a reason why I don't think they made, say, a bigger move at quarterback. I don't think it's necessarily about Stidham. It's more just about circumstances, whether it's the cap and also, you know, the pandemic. I mean, what's the point of bringing in, say, Cam Newton when you're going to need to retrofit the offense for him? If you have no time to work on it, what's the point of that? So I think that all factors in the equation.
That was Bedard from earlier in the week. Here on Agenda Free Friday, which is driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. That was 2 minutes of him saying, I don't know who the starting quarterback's going to be.
But, Mike.
I wouldn't sleep on Brian Hoyer.
But you don't have to sleep on Brian Hoyer. Join us now in our Town Fair Tire Studios, as he does every Friday at this hour. Christopher Gasper from Channel 5 WCVB. That's what that is, right?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Okay, he's powered by the commuter rail. Remember, if you're an essential worker, maybe a medical professional or first responder, the MBTA is running additional commuter rail trains into Boston to help you arrive for your early morning shift and social distance while on board. Visit MBTA.com/coronavirus for schedules and more information. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. So how would you answer that question? Who's the starting quarterback for the Patriots?
It's Stidham. I mean, they're setting it up as Stidham. I'm going to say, when you ask me this question, right, I'm basing my answer on who I think will be the starting quarterback at the end of the season. I could see them going in a direction where to start the year for the first two games, they decide to go with Hoyer because they're going to make Stidham earn it. But I think it's all fake. They're setting this whole thing up. They don't want any real competition for this kid, and I think they've shown that to this point.
This is a fake quarterback competition?
I think it's a fake competition. And what's interesting to me is I understand what they're doing, and I would do it too. And they're sort of having the best of both worlds, where they're not anointing him the starting quarterback, because anytime you hear anything about him, anyone who speaks about him, who speaks with the team, says, well, you know, there's a blind spot there. They want to see what he can do. He's not the starter. There'll be a competition. They don't want to put that pressure on him. But at the same time, they're not bringing in anybody who could actually beat him out. Like, Brian Hoyer, he competed with Brian Hoyer last year, and I agree with Bedard on this. I thought Hoyer outplayed him, but it was close. I thought Hoyer outplayed him, and they gave it to Stidham for obvious reasons. He was a rookie. He was a fourth-round pick. He was cheaper. But in Stidham's mind, do you think he's really deterred in any way by competing with Hoyer? You're like, I beat this guy last year. There's no real, they don't want anybody in here who could come in and make him look like he's not ready. He's not the choice. He's not the guy they should go with.
Man. So I said this at 2 o'clock that I thought Gasper's take, because I knew it was coming. He sent it in the email exchange. I thought Gasper's take was the best point of the day. And cause he's dead on. They don't want a competition. This whole Brian Hoyer thing is a complete sham. Hoyer blows. Everybody knows he blows, for crying out loud. They want to give the job to Stidham, and they want to perpetuate this whole idea that, oh, no, Bill doesn't give him the job. He's got to earn it. They want to perpetuate that idea. If you really wanted that to be the case, you'd bring in Andy Dalton.
Exactly.
You would bring in Andy Dalton and say, okay, here you go. Now there's a veteran guy, Jarrett. Now you're going to have to really fight for it. Not with Brian Hoyer, who is a bum. He's a bum. He's a career backup. And I liked him when they drafted him, but I liked him as a backup. I certainly, if the plan was Brian Hoyer and Stidham, that's a suck plan.
So, Gasper, you're out, yeah. Meaning you don't think Dalton's going to come here for that reason.
Yeah, I want Dalton. I hope they would bring Dalton in. I just don't think at this point they're inclined to do it. I think they're intrigued by Stidham, and they want to stack the deck so he ultimately is the starting quarterback. I mean, again, you could make a case based on this sort of offseason and Hoyer's experience in the system. You could make a case for him to start the first two or three games. Hoyer, I'm referring to.
Yep.
But then all of a sudden, Stidham will take over. They don't want anything too daunting for Stidham. And this is, I have not heard this from anyone. This is just my opinion, yeah, in terms of reading the tea leaves. And here's another one, by the way, that's kind of, you know, crawling up my tailpipe. And let me just go into this. One, Stidham threw four passes last year. One of them was an interception. That certainly does not doom him. It doesn't mean that he's not going to be good. But can we stop with the, like, in this offseason, you have to teach this quarterback? Andy Dalton and Cam Newton know more about quarterbacking in the NFL. They've forgotten more this offseason than Jared Stidham currently knows. He has 0.0 experience, pretty much, as a starting NFL quarterback. So, yes, there's your system, but you cannot convince me that in a year, Jared Stidham has completely mastered the Patriots system to the point that no veteran quarterback could ever catch up. I understand it's a different system, but I thought part of this was the idea of, well, with Brady gone, we can simplify things, or the system doesn't have to be all about Brady. So if that's really the case, wouldn't you want to bring in somebody who you know can at least play in the NFL at a starting quarterback level? Because that is unproven with Jared Stidham. So I don't want to hear any more about, well, he has time in the system. I mean, he has a year in the system as a rookie where he was on the field for four passes. Come on.
Okay, I mean, I hear you. So you're saying Dalton and Newton are still ahead of Stidham,
yes,
from a mental standpoint,
yes,
or that angle of it.
Yes.
I buy it. So you want Andy Dalton. You would take Andy Dalton. Are,
yes,
you doing a Murray show tomorrow with Big Jim?
We are doing a show.
Are you ready for 4 hours of that? Because you understand how your fella feels about the red rifle there.
I do. I do know how he feels about the red rifle. I understand it. But look, this is not for me as much about singing the praises of Andy Dalton as I just look at the Patriots and I think about what Bill Belichick has said over the years. You know, you do what's in the best interest of the team. He mentioned when he drafted Garoppolo, he was talking about quarterbacks. This is not a position where you want to be caught short. And so when I look at those philosophies, I would take Dalton because I think he's good insurance, because I've seen Josh McDaniels win with lesser quarterbacks, Kyle Orton, Matt Cassel. And because when I ultimately sort of look at it, I think that even if Stidham did beat out Andy Dalton, I think Andy Dalton would be okay being a backup. I really do. He's not going to cause problems. I mean, he basically went out of his way to thank the guy who usurped his job, Joe Burrow. I mean, credit to Dalton. He's all class. So I don't think he'd be a problem. He's not a guy who comes here and it's like, if he's, you know, I want Cam Newton, and I still want Cam Newton,
yep,
but I don't think it's going to happen. But I fully acknowledge that if Cam Newton comes here, he's the starter or he's not on the roster. It's not going to work if he doesn't start. I don't feel that way about Andy Dalton. If Andy Dalton doesn't win the starting job, I think he's okay here as a backup.
That sounds like the competitive spirit that I want, as do the rest of the Patriots fans. Oh, I lost out to this kid who's essentially a rookie. Okay. All right, no, I'm good. Yeah, meek geek. I'll go with the unknown with Stidham. I don't want this guy anywhere near New England, let alone the actual Patriots.
But hey, Mike, you know what this quarterback quote-unquote competition is starting to feel like?
Yeah.
It's starting to feel like one of the quote-unquote elections that the Patriots have for team captains. Okay, that's what it's starting to, or team Hall of Fame. Yeah, Bill has rigged the whole thing, is what it is. Bill's controlling the ballot box. Bill is, you know, deciding who's going to win. He's going to take the ballots. He's going to light them on fire and pick who he wants. That's what it is. To me, I think Gasper nailed it. If you wanted real competition for Stidham, if you truly wanted Stidham to have to compete against a guy, you'd bring in, as you said, Joe Average. In fact, in that way, Dalton is the perfect litmus test. He's the perfect litmus test. He's average in the league. You beat him out, you're better than average. You don't beat him out, he plays before you. Plain and simple.
I agree with that. And I think you guys would appreciate this. I heard you on the right end talking about AARP and all that. You're of a different, you know, generation. As Murray knows, I'm a Xennial, so I'm of a different generation even than Murray, who's a Gen Xer, as he knows. We talk about this every Saturday.
Not a real term.
But isn't this such a millennial thing for Stidham? Like, it's a complete setup. Like, they're going to hand him the job, but they want to make him feel good about it, like he earned it.
Yes.
So they'll completely coddle him into thinking he won a competition.
Yes.
Isn't that the most millennial thing ever?
Totally. Absolutely. Yes. I'm not convinced, though, but that I wouldn't be surprised if Dalton's here.
I'll be happy to be wrong. I will. But here's another thing I'll just say quickly. I don't think money's a factor. When you look at what Winston's gotten and what the salary cap situation is, money is not a factor.
Oh, it shouldn't be. Maz, is that watch doing anything for you right now?
No, I'm just saying the way you said that, you think Dalton's going to be here. And I say, well, the Apple Watch will let us know.
Jimmy demands an opinion, which he takes would be predictions, so I'm forced to do it. If I had to guess that, so I think I said this last week or the week before, that if I had just had to guess who the next starting quarterback is, it's a veteran that they bring in off the street. So, Newton... Dalton, is Alex Smith totally out of the picture? Is he going to be back this year? I mean,
I don't think, you know, I would love Alex Smith. I just don't think he's far enough along with that leg. You know, I'll be honest. I haven't seen that ESPN thing that he's doing, but it seems like, you know, he's not going to be ready. I asked someone in the league this, I think maybe 2 months ago. And the indication was, you know, he won't be ready for this year, but maybe that's changed. I don't know.
All right. So that's on the table, of course.
I wouldn't sleep on Brian Hoyer.
And I want to Gasper's thoughts on the Patriots draft. We'll do it right after these words.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
I'm pretty much mystified by that. And after this draft, I said, you know what? Now Aaron Rodgers knows what Tom Brady felt like in 2019. You know, when basically the coach and the general manager basically say to Aaron Rodgers, I honestly felt like last year Bill Belichick said to Brady and Josh McDaniels, you guys figure it out. You always do.
Yep.
And so this year you look at what happened, you know, in a few places in Green Bay. I mean, Green Bay is worse though, Michael, at least. The Patriots took in Keel Harry last year in the first round, and Green Bay has not taken a wide receiver in the first three rounds in the last 6 years. So it's totally crazy, especially when you look at the way the game has gone.
So Peter King mystified the Packers and Patriots, as we only care about the Patriots, to not get in on the receivers this year. Chris, do you agree or disagree?
I would agree. I'm definitely mystified that the Patriots didn't do it. You had a common draft or record, 13 guys taken in the first two rounds. There were 35 guys taken in the draft. And my fear is that they looked at this and said, well, you know, we have a year invested in Jacoby Myers and, you know, Gunnar Olszewski, so we're just going to roll with that. And it's one of those things where I look at it and say, yeah, that's great. You have a year invested with these guys, but these other guys are talented. They're more talented than those guys. And I am stunned that they did not draft a receiver. You know, the Green Bay thing, again, you know more about that than I do. I'm okay with Green Bay not drafting a receiver. I don't love the Jordan Love pick, but Green Bay has been one of those teams that can develop receivers, like Devontae Adams, kind of like Pittsburgh does. There are certain teams that are good at developing receivers. They don't have to use high picks. The Patriots aren't one of those teams.
Yeah, I've never felt... I've never felt that Rodgers did not have the weapons. I've never felt that. He's had more than enough talent around him to win more than he has. I don't buy that. And I hate, sorry, Gasper, coddling these old superstar quarterbacks. Like, I have to prop them up by drafting guys high and surrounding them with, like, elite talent. Like, no, the whole point of having that quarterback is to have him prop everybody else up. And I think your guy Brady had ceased to do that like he did in the past.
There are limits.
You know, late here. Well,
there are limits.
Well, we're about to
find out.
There's
only so much propping you can do.
Well, this is my next...
I mean, you know, propping up Danny Amendola is one thing, or Chris Hogan. Propping up Gunnar Olszewski, that's a whole other deal.
Well, this is my point now. Do you think there's any message behind Bill not drafting a receiver or going out for a big receiver in the offseason by saying, we're going to see what this group really is now that we have a quarterback who will actually look at them and work with them and not shut them out. And when we simplify, you know, that it's a message to Brady and, you know, his camp, i.e. you. Like, no, we've had enough. It's just it had sort of fallen apart with the old guy here.
Maybe, but I really think it's more this. I think it's they invested in it heavily last year using the first round pick on Harry and having the two rookies. And it's like, well, we're already invested in this. So why? And also making the deal for Sanu, which even Bill in his post-draft press conference, he referenced that saying, well, we used the first round pick on Harry and we used the second round pick to get Sanu. So those guys really came from the last draft. He even said that. So I think he looks at it. We're heavily invested in this position, so we should be okay. I just think, okay, you invested heavily, but did you invest the right way? And I also go back and say, when you drafted Isaiah Wynn, you could have had Calvin Ridley. My biggest fear is this, that they invested in the wide receiver class in the wrong year. They could have done it the year before and gotten Calvin Ridley. They could have done it the year after Harry and gotten one of these guys. They didn't do it, and now they're like, nope, we're invested, and you did it in the wrong year.
Well, so with some great second-guessing opportunities coming up in the next couple of years. But, I mean, let me just put it to you like this. Did Bill specifically not draft a receiver to prove that point to Brady? No. No, it's not why he did it, but boy, he'll enjoy it if it works out in his favor. And, you know, it's like one of those things that, you know, did Bill let Brady go because he wants to win with another quarterback? No, not specific. Like, that's not the first thing on his list. The first thing on his list is not, I want to prove myself without Brady, but it's on the list there somewhere, and he'll take it and he'll enjoy it. And I, you know, so I would say, you know, that's the messaging at the draft as well. I think, you know, he would love, boy, would he love bringing back the exact same receiver group and getting more success out of that receiver group with Stidham than Brady. He would love it. Love it. Love it. Is it why he did it? No, that might be a little bit too far, but he'll take it. All right. So Murray and Maz on location. Chris Gasper here in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Let's take some phones, shall we? Here's Mike in Worcester. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Mike, question for you. And I got a question from Maz. The first one I'm touching on with you is Brady gave up on all his receivers last year because he was just so pissed off and didn't want to put the effort in to make them any better. So maybe with Stidham, it's a different story. Secondly, with Maz, I agree. Why don't you bring Dalton in? Because look at the fire it lit under Brady's ass when they got Garoppolo, and it turned him into a different person.
Let me stop you. Is that analogous, Maz?
So I would say no. I understand his point. It's not totally apples to apples. In the case of Brady, you were obviously talking about an accomplished veteran player who had been around a long time and probably needed a little bit of a kick in the ass at that time. This kid is much more brittle. So you do have to be careful. And I'm not saying that you bring in Cam Newton, because that would be a message to Stidham. We don't think you're ready. You're not going to play the whole year. But Hoyer's not real competition. I think Dalton is somewhere in the middle of those two. He's good enough that Stidham is going to have to improve to beat him out, but he's bad enough that you don't look at him and say he's absolutely the starter.
Yeah, I think it's totally apples and oranges. I mean, Bill drafted Garoppolo because he thought it would be time for the next quarterback, you know, coming up in the next couple of years. He doesn't need to motivate Jared Stidham. I mean, and that motivated Brady. That's not why Bill took him. He doesn't need to motivate Jared Stidham. He needs to protect him. Almost just the opposite is your point, Chris. Right?
Yeah, exactly. He needs to make him feel like he's winning a competition, even if there is no competition, or he really didn't win, which was what happened last year with Hoyer. I mean, look, Stidham played well last year in the preseason. Don't get me wrong, but Hoyer outplayed him. And they decided to go with Stidham for obvious reasons. And I don't have a problem with that. But the reality is the same thing happened last year. It's like, hey, you won, kid. But objectively, did you really win? No.
See, but Chris, I don't think he should be, quote unquote, protecting him. This is the NFL. I think that he has to be careful about how much he puts on his plate and how much he challenges him. So again, I think there's a balance there. There needs to be someone that's a threat, but there has to be someone that Stidham also looks at and says, well, I can beat that guy out still though. And I think that there's a balance there. And I think that Dalton is a better balance than Hoyer is.
We continue with your thoughts. Here's Anthony. It is an agenda-free Friday, so everything on the board. Anthony and Waltham on the Red Sox. Go, Anthony.
I was just wondering, would it constitute a good enough return for Mookie Betts if Alex Verdugo turns into a Michael Brantley kind of player and Jeter Downs is a solid starting second baseman? Neither will be Mookie, but would that be a good enough return? What's your take?
Okay. What do those players have to be to have that be a good trade?
Well, look, so I'm sorry, Chris, I'll go quickly.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Do your thing, Maz.
Yeah, Brantley to me has been a good player, but he's been hurt a lot. And so, you know, if the Red Sox end up getting, call it 10 years combined out of those two guys as starting players, then they did well in that deal. All things considered, they did pretty well given that Betts had a year left on the contract.
Yeah, I would agree with what you're saying, Maz. I think for me, part of the calculus is what do the Dodgers get out of Mookie Betts since his Mookie re-signed there? That's part of it in my mind. I like Michael Brantley a lot as a player. I know he's been banged up. I would be happy if Verdugo were a Brantley caliber of player. I would say that's a good deal then. You did okay for yourself given the circumstances.
Quickly, Chris, while we're on it, what do you think of the latest MLB plan that, 10-team divisions, home stadiums, and you just play within that 10-team division, et cetera?
Yeah, I don't mind the plan. I don't know if it's actually feasible from a health standpoint, but I have no problem with doing away with the AL and the NL, and I think it makes some sense. Now, not all those divisions would be even or equal. I think the East with the AL and NL East is a lot more stacked than, say, the West or the Central. I don't have an issue with it. I'll say this. It's pretty clear to me that MLB is the league that is most desperate to get back to games. They didn't get any of their games in. They didn't get any of that revenue, unlike the NHL, where you're looking at a team like the Bruins that got 35 of their 41 home dates in. The NBA was able to go through a good portion of their season. MLB is desperate to get these games going, get some sort of revenue, and also to make sure that they're not completely forgotten about. Because I think there's a lot of people, especially younger people, that are like, oh, no baseball? Meh, I don't care.
Oh, I think that sport has left very little dent for a lot of people. You know,
I mean, have you missed it at all?
I mean, I have.
No. I've missed it a little.
I have. Maybe
I mean, I'm watching old baseball games. Like, I have. In fact, I watched the other day. I watched, you know, you'd appreciate this, Felger, Game 7 of the 1982 World Series.
Oh, don't
a
do that.
A heck of a baseball game. That was a pretty good game, huh?
Seventh inning up 3-2. Maz, you don't miss it that much?
So, no, because it never started. And so I just feel like it's been an extended off season. Now, again, I miss opening day a little bit. Like, I miss the beginning of it. But now that it's gone, oh, I miss the NHL and the NBA playoffs way more.
I mean, not that
way
I,
more.
I mean, of course, probably so. And not that I, you know, really watch full baseball games. Who does? I miss it like crazy, though. I miss just having it there. I miss the ambient noise of a ball game in the background. Like, you read about it. Are you kidding me? Yes, I miss it all. Here comes Murray's update, and we'll have more with Chris Gaspar on Agenda Free Friday.
Mike Felger, Tony Maserati, making your afternoon commute better.
Throw some, Felger. How about a mea culpa? You are wrong. Running backs do matter.
Or worse.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay him.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
As soon as I saw what it was linked to on Saturday, exactly the time I knew I had to get it totally taken off my body. I said covered up, but I want to get it removed from my body. It's shameful that I had it on there ignorantly. I'm sorry for all my friends and family that have to defend me. Putting them in that compromising position is one of the biggest regrets I'll ever have. So to them, I'm sorry. And, I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to take ownership of it. And, this is who I am. Show that, no matter what, that's not who I am. And hopefully you'll all find that out.
I did not find him to be a racist whatsoever. I found him to be very authentic and very apologetic. This kid deserves a chance.
That was Steve Burton, Channel 4. Sorry, Chris. New competition. But anyway, he had the interview with Justin Warwasser, the rookie kicker that the Patriots drafted. last weekend in the fifth round with the 3%er Tattoo, who he says now says not just covered, it will be removed because it was shameful. So what was your reaction to that whole story?
So I'll start on the Patriots side. It's interesting to me that either they didn't know about this, which would be really bad, or they did and still took him, which would be bad. And here's why. The amount of research done into these prospects, and I know it was a little different this year, but they were still able to go to his pro day because Marshall's pro day was before the shutdown. But the amount of research done into these players in terms of their character and all this other stuff, I mean, they're talking to like your elementary school janitor to find out what your deal is. So they didn't know about this. So either they didn't know, which is bad, or they did know and they just didn't care, which is equally bad. In terms of him, you know, I want to take him at his word, and I understand giving him a shot, but I come back to this. He says he got the tattoo 5 years ago. There's different ways to characterize this group. I think that the most euphemistic way to characterize them is as an anti-government group, right? Anti-government group. He got the tattoo 5 years ago. Who was the president 5 years ago?
I'm glad you brought this up. Do you know when the organization was founded?
I'm guessing it was during the Obama presidency.
I thought I read 2008. What happened in 2008, Chris?
He was elected president of the United States.
I mean, I'll go look that up again. I thought I had read that. Don't hold me to that.
Okay.
But I thought it was. I thought 2008 was when they'd gotten going. So continue.
Yeah, so that's my point. So it's anti-government. Was it really anti-government, or was it just a government led by an African-American president?
Believe me. I got no use for this group. It was founded, according to Wiki, formation 2008. That's interesting.
And so that's where it becomes a little more difficult for me.
That's interesting.
To give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, does it mean that he's a white nationalist? No, absolutely not. But in terms of the idea of just this, you know, not knowing anything about the group at all, I don't buy that. He knew something, and I think he knew more than it was sort of support for the military. But it being an anti-government group, I would say I think he knew that. But it was anti-government based on the pigment of the president. And that's where I have an issue. And that's where I can't go as far as Burton went in sort of saying, well, you know, no problem there.
I'm not sure if it's – I mean, I'm sure the pigment had some standing for some of their people. I bet just the political persuasion. You know, it's no – 2008. Interesting timing there. 2008, that's when the formation was.
And someone, by the way, who knows – that New York area basically said that the county he is from is widely regarded as the most conservative county in New York.
Yeah, I don't trust those folks. And so good for him that he completely renounced it. Good for him that he called it shameful. Because if he had, in my mind, if he had supported it, see you later. Bye-bye. See ya. Go back and, you know, arm up, buddy, against the government. Go ahead and do your thing. So he totally renounced it. He was in tears and called it shameful, which is good because it is shameful. And if he had taken any other stance, see you later. That's how I feel about it. Maz, you have any developing opinions on it, or Murray?
Well, so no, my feeling, no, I told you, I look at it the way Chris did. And my initial feeling was I was a little surprised the Patriots are willing to bring this guy in, given what was attached to him, particularly when you factor in that he's a kicker. Not that it would make it right to do it for any player with those kinds of beliefs at any position. And again, I say with those kinds of beliefs, seemingly, okay? Seemingly, because again, there is every chance that he did something stupid. I don't completely dismiss that possibility. But, you know, just listening to the Burton cut in at the end where Steve says, you know, I'm not going to remember the exact verbiage, okay? He doesn't seem like a racist, or he didn't come off like a racist, or whatever it is that Steve said at the end. I mean, how do we know any of that? Like, based on an interview? You know, people can deceive us a million different ways, and there's no way to know. But the tattoo speaks volumes. I think that once they went to a local TV interview, that it became a propaganda campaign, and that didn't sit well with me.
Right. Well, I don't blame you. I don't trust those groups at all. I want nothing to do with them. So I don't blame you for not trusting him. But if you just take him at his word, completely renounced it, said they're shameful, and the whole thing was shameful. I would agree 100%. Shameful. So we'll see. I will say that I think that there's no other shoe to drop because, you know, people have probably been pouring through his timelines and his history and everything else is that he's...
Although I think he made his account private pretty quickly.
Okay. You know.
So you can't do like the Josh Hader thing and go through and like see all his previous tweets.
There's no way to...
Not once it's private. I mean, the only people that could see it would be people that he gives access to.
Well, be that as it may, there has been no other shoe to drop. So it's been 3-4 days. If there's no other shoe to drop and he rightfully calls it shameful, then I don't know what else there is to do. And so, going forward, you're going to stand for more of the right things? Fine. And renounce the things that are the wrong things? Fine. Everyone can turn the page and, turn a leaf and start believing in the right things versus the wrong things. And if you're going to be that guy, I'll accept you. You want to start believing in the wrong things and denouncing the wrong ones? Believe in the right ones and denounce the wrong ones, I'll take it.
Yeah, but great draft though. I mean, don't take any receivers and then take this kicker with a potential character issue in the fifth round. Fantastic.
Long commercial free segment and your calls right after this.
It's Colin Cowherd of Fox and Fox Sports.
Felger and Mazz.
Best afternoon show in America.
Mike Felger.
Felger's a smart aleck.
Tony Mazzarotti.
You know your baseball.
Felger and Mazz.
You guys do a great show.
98.5 to Sports Hub.
Just say it. They don't draft well. They haven't had a Pro Bowler on offense drafted since Gronk. He's now out of the city and a 1 year from being out of the league. This is why Brady left. They can't get weapons. You look at their draft pick. It's a bunch of defensive guys that will disappear into Belichick's system. Where did they get athletic offensively? Because now they got Jared Stidham. He's not exactly Lamar Jackson. He's not exactly Russell Wilson. He's not exactly Patrick Mahomes. He's not exactly Aaron Rodgers, Carson Wentz. He's not Matt Ryan, Jared Goff. I don't think he's Matt Stafford. You got him no weapons. So just say it. They're not good at the draft thing. Great businesses have holes. I thought New England's draft stunk. God, we really need some dynamic playmakers. You know, because Kansas City's got 11 of them. Let's not address it.
Okay.
Great, super duper.
Again, Colin Cowherd ripping apart the Patriots draft. Do you think N'Keal Harry can play, Chris?
I don't know. I really don't. We didn't see enough of him. And that's one of the things, like you were talking earlier, or maybe it was a caller who was saying, Brady gave up on the receivers. Did he give up on N'Keal Harry? I mean, N'Keal Harry wasn't available because he was hurt. And he jumped on the train late. It wasn't fair to N'Keal Harry, and it wasn't fair to Brady. But, I mean, N'Keal Harry wasn't ready. That's why they ran all those screens and let's just get the ball into his hands type of plays.
Did you like him coming out of college?
I did like him coming out of college. I did. I did like him coming out. I wasn't sure he was the best fit for the Patriots system, but we'll see. I mean, he's big. He's physical. He has a lot of talent. Look, the jury's out, but he better produce because even though I don't think that wide receiver class on paper – was great or was promoted as great, some of the guys already have made an impact. A.J. Brown, Deebo Samuel, Deontay Johnson, D.K. Metcalf.
Oh, no.
Terry McLaurin.
Oh, so listen, we were talking about this earlier. We're going to be able to compile a list from last year's receiver class and this year's receiver class. And in 2 or 3 years, if N'Keal Harry can't play, look back and say, there were 15 receivers who turned into real NFL players available to you in those 2 years, and you got none of them. Like, there's a second guess setting up there.
Marquise Brown, Mecole Hardman, I could go on.
So this is the question. All right, well, get back to the calls here with Gasper in studio. We've got Maz and Murray on location. Matt in Braintree, I had something on Michael Jordan earlier. Matt, what do you got?
Well, yeah, you just like to bash, like, the greatest athletes ever. Gasper, you're the only guy who I've ever seen – like legitimately make Felger angry on the air. So I just wanted your opinion on what he was talking about. He bashes Randy Moss for like 10 years and then he gets on Monday and calls Michael Jordan like a degenerate and a failure and the guy sucks. And I just wanted,
well, hold on. Well, I mean,
it was asinine. It made me want to blow my brains out.
Well, don't do that. And don't mischaracterize. He's the greatest player ever. I said that, but I feel like he comes across to me as a degenerate, and I think as a post playing situation, I think he's kind of a loser. I do. I think once he stopped playing,
well, I mean, he does that. I mean, he has the Jordan brand, which is a $1 billion business.
So what? But what is he? What did that take from him?
What do you mean? He's involved in the design of stuff, that's his brand.
Oh, stop!
No, look. Here's what I would say.
Based on his brilliance as a player.
I didn't hear what you said about Michael Jordan. But I'm just going to say this. If you want to sort of focus it to he's a terrible owner, general manager, I wouldn't disagree with you a bit.
Thank you.
You are absolutely correct. Well, he is a terrible owner and a terrible general manager. He drafted Kwame Brown number one. Well, enough said.
Well, but that's where it started. For a guy who was so cutthroat, rip your heart out, has to win as a player, once he stopped playing, what happened to that? What happened to that? I mean, from what I understand, who he hires as an owner are just like his hometown cronies, right?
For the most part, yeah.
Okay, and he doesn't spend to the tax, doesn't pay for players, doesn't care about who he hires, or just, you know, slaps it out there, collects the money as an owner, and doesn't care if he wins or not. I mean, that's how he comes across to me as an executive.
I wouldn't say that. It's not like he does care whether he wins or not.
I've seen no indication of it.
But I think he does care. I think
based on what?
I still think he's competitive. But at the same time, I think he doesn't know how to do it, and he doesn't take well to anybody questioning Michael Jordan. He's incapable of realizing that being Michael Jordan doesn't make you an expert on everything, and being a great basketball player does not make you an expert on building a great basketball team or being a great owner of a basketball team. He seems incapable of recognizing that.
He feels dirty to me. He just feels like, ugh. And, you know, again, is this thing going to address the gambling problem or not? And I just think there's some dark, you know, dirty stuff with him. He looks horrible.
The Last Dance is too fun, Chris, so stop enjoying it.
Well, no, I mean, he was fun to watch. He's fun to watch on highlights.
He's so good.
His era of basketball, I did not find the 90s interesting. I thought the 80s were more interesting. I think now is way more interesting.
I did like the 80s better.
You know, I mean, and that's not to say the 80s were better or now is better. I think now is better. I think it's infinitely more interesting. So I didn't enjoy the 90s. I didn't enjoy their run. There was no good competition, but that's not his fault. The thing afterwards is his fault. And the what feels like a massive, debilitating gambling problem is that going to be addressed at any point in time? And does it carry with him to this day? And if he's someone who is worth, you know, $1 billion now because he owns an NBA team, and you can't not be worth $1 billion if you own a pro sports team, so he just does. But does he net gaining money or losing money with all the gambling debts tied on top of it? And if he's someone who, you know, loses millions of dollars a year in gambling, that to me is a loser. I don't care how much money you have or how much money you have in the bank. If that's what you are,
if it's the equivalent of like $10 to a normal human being, it doesn't matter as long as he's enjoying himself.
I don't agree with that. I think
you're on an island on this one.
No, I'm not.
You are. The guy's worth $3 billion, Mike. If he loses a few million dollars a year gambling, it really doesn't matter to his bottom line.
It's gross.
So, look, I'm eager to see whether or not.
I get sad. The guy that sits at the blackjack table and loses and loses and loses and can't get up, sad. That guy's sad. And if that's Michael Jordan, he's sad. I don't consider him a winner if that's who he is.
Well, he's only sad if he you know, gambles himself into oblivion. If he gambles himself out of $3 million and then walks right back into his palatial apartment and doesn't have a worry in the world, then I don't think it's all that sad.
I don't agree with that.
That's just my two cents. To me, the problem comes in ultimately gambling away your life, if that's the case.
If you can't get up from the table, that's sad. That's sad.
Yeah, I mean, but again, Mike, to what end?
Of an issue, yeah.
It's sad.
I've never thought that I've heard some stories. I'm sure we've all heard stories being in sports about Michael Jordan. I don't think he's the greatest human being. He's just the greatest player of all time.
Right, he is, and I agree.
So that's fair.
I agree.
So we should not conflate the two, right?
I guess not.
No,
I
mean, and I'm not criticizing you. I'm talking more about the caller. Like, you can have an appreciation for Michael Jordan, the basketball player, right? Which I think you do, but at the same time, not feel great about Michael Jordan, the person.
Well, but it's not just that. So where it all started was what this special is highlighting, and it should, is Jordan's competitive nature as a player and how obsessed he was with winning and competing and how awesome that is and how much I love that. And then I look at him now and I go, you know, what happened to that?
He got old. But you're talking about the gambling problem. Don't you think that sort of hyper competitiveness would feed the gambling problem? It's a double edged sword, isn't it?
Sure. It
his greatest strength is also his greatest weakness.
It might have at one point. I also wonder, you know, if he bet on basketball games. I mean, I know he did to an extent. There's this great clip out there of Jeremy Roenick telling a story where Jeremy Roenick played golf with Jordan, and he tells a story that they it was during he what 92 I can't remember the year or, you know early 90s. So he and Jordan play golf. They play 18 holes, and Jordan loses a couple thousand to him. And Roenick's like, well, I'm off tonight, but I know you've got a game, so we'll cut out. And Jordan says, no, we're gonna loop it right back. And they go walk another 18 holes, Roenick says, and we have about 10, 12 Bud Lights, and we're drinking beer the whole way. He says it. We have about 10. Jordan's playing tonight. I take him for another couple thousand. And then, you know, as he's walking off the course after 10, 12 beers there for our 36 holes, we have this conversation about what he's going to do tonight. And I say, well, there's no way. Yeah, this is Roenick talking. He says, there's no way. You're toast tonight because you've walked 36 holes and you've just chugged 12 beers and lost thousands of dollars to me. And Jordan says, I'll bet you what I owe you that I go for, you know, 30 and we win. And Roenick says, I'll take that bet all day long. And Jordan goes for 46 and they win and Jordan gets his money back.
Oh, wow. That's a great story.
It's a great story, except you understand this is why we don't gamble on sports, because this is, you know how dirty that is and how easy it is. And we all know it's documented. Jordan loses thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars to really creepy people on the golf course, drug dealers. He was involved with all that stuff. And so how easy is it for him to walk off the golf course owing someone $100,000? And as he's walking to his car saying, I'll bet you $100,000 tonight on the under. And then he goes and plays a basketball game and gets $100,000 back. That's why they don't want athletes involved with gamblers. It's like 101. It's the simplest thing ever. And so if Jordan is so flippant with that, with just Roenick for a couple thousand, what else is he capable of? And is he has a gambling problem? He's capable of all of it. And I'm sorry. I do look at that. I do look at that. And that is tied to him as a player. And I think there's just a whole whiff to him that I'm just not into. Doesn't take away from what he was as a player. He was amazing. But, you know.
You're not into the mythology.
Yeah, I mean, is this a real look at him or not? So I like
that. No, it's not, because exactly. He had to okay the footage being used. The footage sat in the NBA Entertainment archives for years. And the way it was written and what I've read is that they couldn't use any of it or put anything together until Jordan okayed that they could do it. So, of course, it's going to be – he has, like, final say, you know, final cut on the whole deal. So, do you think they're going to delve into that? No.
So, I do. I can't help it. Gasper, thanks for coming in. We got a Gasper Murray extravaganza tomorrow?
We do, yes. 10-1.
Yes. See you then.
I know Murray will be very excited about coming back in the building.
Okay. Well, Chris, we'll see you next week. Thanks for coming in.
Sounds good.
Here comes Murray's update. 90 seconds, no commercials, and we're back, I promise. Your calls the whole rest of the way.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, final hour agenda-free Friday. It's driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. We got Maz and Murray on location. Felger here in the A-hole chair in our Town Fair Tire Studios. A lot of you have been waiting patiently. We did a lot on the return of sports. More on Andy Dalton and the Patriots and the draft. Any of the stuff you want to get into with Gasper here, by all means, we'll take it on everything. I'll go right to the phones unless Maz and Murray have a opening thought for the 5 o'clock hour for the people of Boston.
Negative.
Niet.
Okay, Bob in Boylston waiting patiently on the return of sports. Go ahead, Bobby. Okay, I don't blame him. He's been on hold for 2 hours there, so he's not still there. The return of his comment line said the fans won't go back, which is a whole nother thing, and which is, I think, really telling as well, which is the fans, the you know, yeah, I talk about this with the economy, too. It's one thing to say open up the economy, open up the buildings, open up sports. People have to be confident enough to go back to sit in the restaurants next to somebody or sit in the stadiums and watch a game, and the people are not there yet. The polling shows the people are not there yet.
Well, and Mike, that part of it speaks to the leadership that you brought up earlier in the week. I mean, that's where somebody with a presence, I think, and with a command of the situation, or at least a perceived command of the situation, can help instill confidence in the consumer, right? And in the human being. And that's clearly not happening.
Jim and Everett waiting patiently. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I got a question. NASCAR's going to open on the 17th. Do you think that major leagues should send observers down to see how they're going to quarantine the drivers and the teams and the officials?
So let me just stop you, Jim. Should they send spotters and people to see if they're maintaining the bubble.
How does it apply?
I'm not sure exactly what his point is. What they're trying to accomplish and what they're modeling is not feasible in my mind, which is, let me just start at the very base level. The NBA wanted to open up gyms today to have players come in and shoot, and they got pushback. And they put in all these regulations about allowing a couple guys to come into the gym to shoot. Four people max per building, per session, 12 feet of distance, everyone wearing masks until you start working out, limited locker room access, no saunas, no cold tubs, no Cairo chambers. The Lakers are going to have a dedicated ball boy rebounder for each guy in gloves, PPE, disinfected shoes, all of this. If that's what it's going to take just to get three or four guys in a building to shoot baskets, it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. There's got to be there has to be more confidence on the part of the players or the teams or everybody that they can all get through it healthy, because there's no way if that's what you have to go through for four people, what are you going to go through for 100 people in the building to do an actual game? It's not going to work.
No, that's right. It's because that type of scenario is, it's paranoia. I mean, you can't function in an environment of paranoia. I thought he was saying, are the other sports going to watch it and then try to replicate what they were doing? And my answer is, you get any information you can. Yes, any and all information you can get to try to get back to work, you get it. No question about it.
100%. You should be watching the Korean Baseball League or the Chinese Baseball League, which have been up and running in empty buildings now for a couple of weeks. For crying out loud, Jimmy's Wrestling Federation. What are they doing? They're putting up two shows a week with dozens of guys rolling around sweating on each other in a ring. So what are they doing? How are they staying healthy? Are they staying healthy? Look at all of it. Absolutely, they should. Dakota in Braintree on Andy Dalton. Dakota, you want him?
Before I get to Dalton, I just want to say one thing about the Adam Silver NBA thing, okay? I hate this fake narrative. Mike and Tony and Jim, do you know anybody that needed to get a test for COVID that was denied to get the test? Other than the first week back in March when this thing broke and the hospitals weren't ready, okay? If you need to get tested and have the symptoms, the tests are available. So when Adam Silver says, well, I don't want to have the NBA guys tested because we're not ready as a country, it's absolutely BS, because I've posted this all over social media and everywhere, and I've asked, who do you know needed to get tested that was denied?
So why do you think he's saying that?
It's political. That's what it is. It's all political BS. There is nobody in this country that has the symptoms that cannot get tests. And they keep moving the goalposts. One day it's about tests. The next thing it's about antibodies. The next thing it's about hospitals, ventilators.
So hold on, Dakota, settle down. So you're saying that Adam Silver is sacrificing his league's business for politics?
No, he's saying it politically. It's a political statement that he says, you know what, I want to be able to do this, but I want to make sure that everybody in the country that needs to get tested can get tested. That's all it is. It's just words to make him look good because he doesn't want backlash and says, yep, my guys are all going to get tested and go back to work. So he's going to say that out there to throw it out in the public domain. So when he gets confirmation or whatever, you know what, it's time. He says, well, he's obviously being cautious. He said he wasn't going to go back to do this.
Okay,
being tested.
So I'll tell you what. If he's just paying lip service to it, I have no problem with it.
I don't have a problem with it either. My point is,
I mean, I'm actually worried, Dakota, that they're actually holding off because it's for real. That's my issue. Again, when I read on ESPN today that Silver has publicly and privately insisted he couldn't abide his league gobbling up tests if the general public and medical professionals are without mass access to tests. And then there was another line here that says several manufacturers can assure the NBA that they will get the tests they need, but they can't guarantee the American public will have its needs met. And that's why the NBA is holding off, because the American public won't have its needs met. That worried me that the NBA is actually going through with that. If you're saying it's just lip service to say the right thing, then fine. I mean, what's wrong with saying the right thing?
There's nothing wrong with saying the right thing. My point is, it's okay for Adam to say that, but I'm just saying the point. Anybody that needs to get tested is not being tested. There are tests everywhere, okay? You can get tested. So that false narrative that's out there across the U.S. is a bunch of BS, and it's going to go away, but they need to just keep talking about it, because if there wasn't an election this year, we'd be all back to work May 15th, once everything slowed down, because as a country, we stopped because of fear. First, we were supposed to have 2 million deaths in this country.
Dakota.
We have to shut everything down. And then they said we're going to run out of ventilators.
Dakota, yeah. Your comment line said Andy Dalton. If your comment line said testing and ventilators, I wouldn't have taken you. So call us next week. Here's Tony and Lynn. Go ahead, Tony, on the same topic. Go ahead. Okay, that's not going to work. He says, why aren't sports considered an essential business? They shouldn't be considered an essential business. Don't like that. That terminology is bad form to say sports are essential business. The league should be getting back and running because it's their business. And any business, whether it's essential or not.
If you want to donate $18 million to Florida, you too can be named an essential business, much like the pro wrestling companies.
Very good, Jimmy.
Exactly
good work.
Right.
No, yeah, good work.
You should all be trying to get back to work. We should all be trying everything we can for our business and our jobs and our industries, and that's what the NBA should be focused on, or sports should be focused on. They don't need to be called essential, but they're important to the people that work in those industries, so they should be trying to be back online. Period. Story over.
So can I just jump in? Because some of what Dakota said pissed me off, and I know we don't want to get on this road, okay? I know we don't want to get on this road. So I don't want to get too, you know, I don't want to respond too much to it. But when he says that everybody who wants a test can get one right now, yes, if they're showing symptoms or if they meet the criteria. So, but the issue of people going back to work gets a little grayer. That's all. Like, so who should get them first? I mean, you tell me people that work in the meat plants, okay? Trump wants to keep open the meat plants. Should they get them first? I would say yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, I don't know, I understand what Dakota's ultimate point was. In order for people to go back to work en masse, while this thing is still potentially a problem, and it's going to be a problem for a long time, is going to require a lot of people to get tested regularly. And so that's the part he's missing. The people that are showing symptoms and that meet the criteria, they're getting their tests.
So you know what Dakota's issue is. You should get him Howie's number. Get it for me, Jimmy. You can text it to him. You can call Howie, rant and rave about ventilators.
Trump's the king of ventilators.
Along these lines, Bill in Framingham. Yes, Bill?
Hey, I just want to say that the kicker with the tattoo, you said he was from the most conservative part of New York. Well, maybe that's how they all believe. They don't like the government. They love the military. There's nothing wrong with that. And then you have a call and you have a Colin Kaepernick who goes out with the leading black radical activist in the country for a woman who's totally against white causes, has never contributed one penny to a white cause, but everybody wants Colin Kaepernick to get a chance to get
back. Here's another one. Jimmy, what's that Howie number again for me, please? Would you get it for
Seriously.
Me? Seriously. Call Howie and rant and rave about that. But for the record, if you're yelling at me, I got no use for Colin Kaepernick either.
These people need to go out for a walk.
Chris in the truck.
Jerry Callahan.
Go out for a walk, Dakota. Dakota, go for a walk. Take your dog. If you don't have a dog, buy one.
Chris in the truck on Tom Brady, I hope. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, it's on Tom Brady. So I know Tom Brady's not the only person to blame as to why he's not with us anymore. I get that. I wanted to know if you guys have any thoughts or any issue with the fact that he ran Jimmy G out of town. Mainly because he said, oh, I'm going to be here until I retire, or I want to be play until I'm 45. And now he bounces 2 years early after running the supposed future out of town. Do we have any problem with that? Just want to hear your guys' thoughts.
Yeah, should we have an issue with that he encouraged Kraft to get rid of him, and then he only gave Kraft 2 more years? Should we have an issue with that?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. I don't think it's wrong. And I know Murray is saying, of course you feel that way. But nonetheless, yeah. I mean, if you are going to ask the franchise to trade away the heir apparent, then sure, you should be a little bit more committed to them in the long term. Absolutely.
Nobody thinks about that, just you, Maz.
Well, so I would say there's a stronger case if he had more term on his contract. His contract was up. So it's not like he didn't technically bail on the team. It was just time's up, right? So
well, he wanted out, though, Mike.
He did. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. But, you know, I don't blame Brady on that. I blame the Patriots then for giving in just to make him happy to deal Garoppolo. You know, like, I mean, that's who you should. Just because Brady stomped his feet doesn't mean they had to give in to him. So that's who you should blame if you want to blame anyone.
It's still the most stunning part of the whole thing. He asked for the right to become a free agent, and they granted it, which means at the end of the day, they didn't want him either.
Justin in Attleboro on Michael Jordan. Hi, Justin.
Hey, Falgar, I kind of disagree with you. So Michael Jordan is a bad person for gambling. I mean, when it comes down to it, he's got a lot of money. He doesn't gamble billions. He gambles tens, thousands, whatever the case might be. I mean, honestly, look at the Tiger Phil thing. Even when they were doing their golf thing, they were gambling. Granted, it was going for charity. But in the same sense, I think all these athletes gamble when it comes down to it.
So Phil Mickelson's another one, Justin.
Bad example.
Phil's another one that I think has some issues. And I didn't say Michael Jordan's a bad person because he gambles. I didn't say that. I didn't even say Michael Jordan's a bad person. I think he's a little dirty. I feel like he's, I don't know. I feel if you are one of those, I don't care how much money you have. If you're a guy who can't get up from the freaking blackjack table, that's sad to me. That is sad, Murray. And I don't care what home he goes home to or how much money he's got in the bank. If you're that guy, that ain't cool. I don't know. I don't think that's fun. Wee.
And I'm not. And if that person enjoys it, I'm not going to judge them for it. Even if they make $20,000 a year, and you know they're still able to do it, and maybe you think they're sitting there too long. I'm not going to judge someone if they actually enjoy doing that. A poker table, whatever it happens to be, craps, whatever they're.
Oh no, I mean I enjoy gambling too. But someone who can't stop, that's not cool.
Okay, but so again, this is my question. Define can't stop. At what point is can't stop? Like, if it doesn't create him any financial stress, then what's the problem?
Do you think it hasn't in his life?
I don't know. I mean, I know Mickelson alleged. I've heard rumors about Mickelson being unable to pay debts and things of the like. I don't know that I've heard that Jordan has been unable to pay debts, although I don't know. I mean, I'd love to find out exactly what the whole story was with his father. I'll give you that one. Like, that one feels a little shady to me. And you know, I don't think we're going to get any major answers here in this documentary. That's for sure.
Well, but I mean, again, this is my personal opinion. I'm not, you know, we all have our own versions of right and wrong. I'm just saying how I feel. Even if you still have enough money in the bank, but you still lose and lose and lose and can't stop, that to me does not feel harmless or in any way something you want to emulate or celebrate or, like, that's not fun. And that doesn't feel like fun to me. No, we just did our long commercial-free segment. Did you enjoy it? More of your calls right after these words.
Noah says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, final hour, agenda-free Friday. It's driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. We got Maz and Murray on location. Felger here in the A-hole chair in our Town Fair Tire Studios. A lot of you have been waiting patiently. We did a lot on the return of sports. More on Andy Dalton and the Patriots and the draft. Any of the stuff you want to get into with Gasper here, by all means, we'll take it on everything. I'll go right to the phones unless Maz and Murray have a opening thought for the 5 o'clock hour for the people of Boston.
Negative.
Nyet.
Okay, Bob in Boylston waiting patiently on the return of sports. Go ahead, Bobby. Okay, I don't blame him. He's been on hold for 2 hours there, so he's not still there. The return of his comment line said the fans won't go back, which is a whole nother thing, and which is, I think, really telling as well, which is the fans, the you know, yeah, I talk about this with the economy, too. It's one thing to say open up the economy, open up the buildings, open up sports. People have to be confident enough to go back to sit in the restaurants next to somebody or sit in the stadiums and watch a game, and the people are not there yet. The polling shows the people are not there yet.
Well, and Mike, that part of it speaks to the leadership that you brought up earlier in the week. I mean, that's where somebody with a presence, I think, and with a command of the situation, or at least a perceived command of the situation, can help instill confidence in the consumer, right? And in the human being. And that's clearly not happening.
Jim and Everett waiting patiently. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I got a question. NASCAR's going to open on the 17th. Do you think that major leagues should send observers down to see how they're going to quarantine the drivers and the teams and the officials?
So let me just stop you, Jim. Should they send spotters and people to see if they're maintaining the bubble?
How does it apply?
I'm not sure exactly what his point is. What they're trying to accomplish and what they're modeling is not feasible in my mind, which is, let me just start at the very base level. The NBA wanted to open up gyms today to have players come in and shoot, and they got pushback. And they put in all these regulations about allowing a couple guys to come.